As our nation enjoys a three-day weekend in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., we are pausing a moment to remember the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, who led our nation towards civil rights not only with constitutional arguments, but with prophetic words of faith. Reverend King was first and foremost a Christian, a Baptist preacher, son of a Baptist preacher, who graduated from Crozier Seminary, coincidentally my seminary by virtue of several mergers, with the conviction that God intends justice, that is, fairness for all people. King was not perfect. He was human, as we all are. But we remember him because he staked his life on the belief that God called him to lead all people to work together, nonviolently, to bring about God's justice in the world. He taught that God's love, and therefore our call to love, transcends all boundaries. He urged people to build the beloved community, the society which would realize the love of God and neighbor. To those ends, he worked, preached, and sacrificed to bring reconciliation and justice to our divided nation. Emmanuel Church responded to that message back in 1968 in many ways, most visibly when the Martin Luther King window was conceived and dedicated there in the back of the nave. I know many of you heard me talk about that window at the Adult Forum a couple weeks ago, and if you haven't noticed, take a look at it as you exit. This year's recognition of Martin Luther King Day comes at a critical moment of our communities and indeed our nation's life. We have, in the past 6 months, had our attention focused on many ways that we have not realized the vision that he held up. And we are beginning to experience the pain of the vast differences in perception of reality that exist among us. In the back of our prayer book, there's a little-known section referred to as an outline of faith, a catechism in question and answer form. It asks, what is the ministry of the laity? The answer, to carry on Christ's work of reconciliation in the world. Recently, some members of our parish were moved to consider what it meant for them to be reconcilers in this present environment. A couple of them are here to speak to you today about their experience.
Good morning, Emmanuel friends. My name is Allison Williams.
And I'm Trisha Copeland.
We are honored to come before you today to help recognize Dr. King's legacy by sharing a powerful experience that is taking us personally and spiritually on a very important journey. In early December, at least 10 women from our Emmanuel community participated in a mother-to-mother event held at the First Congregational Church here in Webster Groves. I know there's others here who participated in that event or other events in the community related to conversations around Ferguson. If you've participated in any of those, just raise your hand real quick. Thank you. This was the fourth in a series of community conversations started very intentionally by Black mothers. Mothers who believe deeply in the opportunity for us to collectively stand together and ensure that our community should and can be safe places for our children to grow up. Mothers who believe that reconciliation begins with real and honest listening to one another and search for true, true understanding of one another's experiences. With this belief, they launched Mother to Mother conversations, as they, in their marketing materials, literally then says, where Black mothers can share with white mothers the reality of parenting Black children, especially sons, in our St. Louis community. Just to describe this event a little bit more so that you can visualize it, the First Congregational Church just down the block on Lockwood was packed, and extra chairs were added at the back. It was mostly white moms, many from Webster Groves, Kirkwood, and the surrounding areas. There were a few men in the congregation as well. Each of the 8 Black mothers who stood up to tell her story of raising her son in situations that caused her to fear for his life. These are stories that many of us had never heard before.
We come before you today to share our reflections and experiences as white women, sitting and listening to our Black sisters and their experiences of parenting. I have listened to conversations that were really hard, that brought tears, that tore at my heart, that created anger, frustration, and even feelings of guilt and confusion. I have learned that the listening process is really hard, especially when it is different than or challenges my own experiences, and that the listening process becomes really powerful when I am willing to listen at the next level, beyond the level when I think I have all the answers, and I am willing to honor and hold true another's reality. We committed at the event to really listen deeply and work to understand the perspectives that were shared, even when they were very different than our own, and it was a powerful opportunity. We come before you today not with answers or expectations, not to debate what occurred on August 9th, not to debate a grand jury decision, and not to criticize law enforcement, but rather to share the deep and personal stories we heard, to share the questions we are asking ourselves in our faith journey, and as people who care deeply about our St. Louis community and our work toward reconciliation. If you had asked me before August 9th how race relations were going in St. Louis, I would have told you they were fine and that the community was being mended and people were accepting of each other, or that racial tensions were more of a problem with older generations. I was wrong. I began to engage in active listening, and the more aware I became, the more I realized how clueless I really was. I continued seeking out additional learning opportunities, and the Mother to Mother event intrigued me. For you see, the Mother to Mother discussion centered around a dreadful and essential conversation that every Black mother, and I suspect every mother of a minority child, has with their son about how to humble themselves in the face of authority, to protect themselves as best they can when they fall suspect simply because of the color of their skin. This was mind-blowing to me. At the event, these moms stepped forward to talk about their experiences and the conversations they had had with their children. Their hopelessness and exhaustion was palpable. One of the speakers said she didn't want to come because she was tired. Tired of retelling the same painful stories and revisiting those emotions. In particular, the speaker who resonated with me was the mom who recounted her experience when her son was in first grade. Her story touched me on a personal level because last year, as many of you know, when my son was in first grade, I spent a lot of time at my son's school and in the principal's office. However, our stories deviate there. When she was called to come to the principal's office, she was met not only by the principal, but also a police officer. She was not greeted by kind faces as I was. Some hugs, reassuring words of, "It's okay, Mom, you're doing okay, he's a good kid." Instead, she was told that she should get her kid straightened out, or the police officer would be seeing a lot more of him. He was 6 years old. I'm convinced that very little will change if I remain silent. There is a constant tugging in my soul telling me that I need to do something, not just because it is the right thing to do, but because it is what God calls me to do.
The story that really resonated with me was a story told by a woman named Amy. Amy and I have a lot in common. You see, we both work in the nonprofit space. We see each other at a lot of events in the St. Louis community, and our paths often cross. And Amy chose to speak about a story related to her 12-year-old son, the age of my oldest son, Alexander. Amy tells of watching her son grow up and realizing around the age of 10 or 11, he didn't really look like a little boy anymore. He was really starting to look much more like a man. That point at which many of us as parents start to take pride as we watch our sons grow up really struck fear in Amy's heart because she realized it was time to start having the talk with her son. Helping him understand that if he was in a situation with law enforcement, he should be polite, he should be respectful, he should look down, he should keep his hands open and visible, and never in his pockets. He should not reach into his pockets. He should not make any sudden movements. He should not put up any kind of a fight, and he certainly should not talk back at all. She also told him that he may be watched more closely than others simply because of his skin color and because he was beginning to look more like a man than a boy. They would have this conversation on and off over time. When he was 12 and in seventh grade, he was with a group of friends. His friends decided to start drinking, and this young man decided to go home, a decision that any parent of a seventh grade boy would be proud of their child to make. He was walking home, this is in broad daylight, through the neighborhoods in University City, and noticed a police car drive by. The police car drove by again, and it drove by again. He continued walking home, but was getting really nervous, started walking a little bit faster, as any 12-year-old child in that type of situation might do. And he was recalling what his mom had shared with him. The police car pulled over and asked him to stop. Remember, this young man was in his own neighborhood, walking home. They began to ask him questions. What was his name? Where was he from? Where was he going? They finally let him go, and he returned home. He came in the door crying and went straight to Amy, telling her this story. He was so upset and frightened, mostly because he had done nothing, and he didn't understand why he was stopped in questions like this. As Amy recalls this story to us, she reminds us that her son was wearing a polo shirt, khaki pants, a belt. His shirt was neatly tucked in, and of course he was wearing his Sperry topsiders. He was dressed in a way that is considered respectful and very neat in our community, and he was still pulled over this way. As he told his mom what occurred, he said he was so scared that he just wanted to run home. He just wanted to turn around and run because he knew home was not that far away. I can hear in my head again and again what Amy told him at that point. She said she looked him straight in the eye and said, "Baby, you never run. You never, ever run." As I listened to Amy, I thought about the many parent-son conversations I have had with my own children that my husband and I have both had with them, and all that we do to help them develop to be strong and confident young men. I thought about the message that Amy's son receives again and again about himself when he receives this type of coaching from his parents, coaching that they absolutely and rightfully feel is necessary for them to do. I thought about how a child takes in this type of a message, the message that they must act in a certain way with certain people in order to stay safe, simply because of the color of their skin. Part of what is natural, God-given, and beautiful about who they are by default puts them at risk in our community and indeed in our nation. The message that by virtue of being a black man, they may be scary and frightening to others just because, and therefore watched more closely. And I thought about how my heart would break if that was my children's experience. As I listened to Amy and the others speak, I was struck by the sheer energy and will it took for them to stand in front of nearly 250, mostly strangers, and share their narratives and share their very personal stories. I was struck by the deep commitment to healing and reconciliation by first being able to share and witness their truth, by being vulnerable enough to put themselves out there when their experiences might be challenged, argued about, or misunderstood. Finally, I came to the realization that this was not their story alone to tell. As a Christian called to true reconciliation, I am asked to deeply understand, honor, and share another story, all as part of our community's journey to move forward. Thank you for giving me time to share with you today. I firmly believe without this type of understanding, we will not be able to move forward as a community.
Angie McBride, another active mother in our parish, was at the Mother to Mother event and was unable to be here to speak to you today, but she cited this favorite quote from Dr. King. People fail to get along because they fear each other. They fear each other because they don't know each other. They don't know each other because they have not communicated with each other. Thanks to mothers to mothers, and to our Emmanuel mothers who have listened and spoken, and to all who in one way or another are listening and speaking, so that we can communicate with our neighbors, know our neighbors, and let love replace fear of our neighbors. Amen.